Hi, it's Brock Romanek, editor of thecorporatecouncil.net. I'm here today with Harriet Pearson, who's a partner of Hogan Lovell here in D.C., and she's a former chief privacy officer of IBM. So cybersecurity is our topic. As I've blogged recently, I think it's really almost the number one hot topic going forward, even hotter than political spending disclosures. Just recently, in the last week or two, the New York Times, Washington Post, and other mass media have said they've been getting hacked for several years, and of course not a day goes by when you read something in the newspaper about that happening to a public company. So my first question for you, Harriet, is why is it such a hot topic for lawyers now and not just the IT department?
Well, hello, Brock. Thanks very much for having me. And I think it's a hot topic. It's been a hot topic for IT for a number of years. I would say well over a decade. For lawyers now, what's happening is the three trends are converging. One is that our clients are dealing with more data than they ever have before, more data that's valuable, that's sensitive, that can be potentially compromised. And much of that data is now connected because we have we all have devices, and we all have more computers that speak to one another via the Internet. As we have more data and it's more connected, it's under more of a threat. Not only are there cyber criminals out there who are looking to gain access to credit card information, but you have carelessness of any of us in dealing with data, and our devices can lead to the loss or compromise of that data. And you have now publicized incidents such as the ones you mentioned in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, et cetera, where you have other actors who are looking at getting into systems. All of these trends are converging, and developments are converging to create greater risk. With risk, you have government responding with laws, enforcement, and proposals for more regulation. And that's where the legal profession comes in. As lawyers, we are sitting with our clients or advising our clients about how to manage legal risk, and some of this now has frankly become a matter of legal risk. Starting in 2003, 2004, 2005, the state of California proposed and then enacted a law that requires any compromise of data about people, like Social Security numbers or credit card numbers, any compromise like that to be reported to regulators and to individuals themselves. By now, fast forward to 2013, 46 out of the 50 states have such requirements, so that we have become fairly familiar with what happens when we get a notice in the mail that says, oh, a company has suffered a breach and there's been a compromise. That's the start of how lawyers have gotten involved in data security, in advising their clients how to handle those kinds of breaches. What's happened now, however, is that not only do you have those kinds of incidents, but now you have a greater awareness of all the other ways that data and IT systems might get compromised. And that's what's leading to the latest round of media and regulatory and political developments.
So I think I've done about 400 of these podcasts now over the last decade, and you are the first former, someone that's a chief privacy officer I've talked to. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your practice, and particularly your experience at IBM and how that's relevant to cybersecurity?
Well, I started working in the area of data privacy in the 1990s, before it got as cool as it is today, I guess. But back in the mid-90s, I started working on data privacy when the Internet and the web first became platforms for commerce. And 19 years at IBM, I started working in this area, and eventually in the year 2000 became the privacy officer, which meant that I oversaw setting the kind of data security policies and practices that the company would follow, and looking at the procedures and guiding the company on the processes and procedures for handling data. As security counsel, which was the other half of my role, I worked on guiding the company's approach to data security and cybersecurity law, policy, and compliance. And now after leaving IBM after 19 years, now as a partner at Hogan Lovells, which is a global law firm, I'm working now with clients across industries on these same issues. And I find that the in-house experience translates well now to helping clients grapple with these issues. And there are those of us that have been in the field for a while, and I guess I'm dating myself by saying how long I've been doing this, are now finding that the accumulation of these experiences that we have had working with regulators and, frankly, helping to build policies is really helpful to help companies address the more active environment. It wasn't always as active as it is today in terms of actual legislation or regulation that is speaking about not just telling the public about, you know, data breaches, but actually now what steps organizations need to take to achieve security. That's what the debate is about now, is how do you actually take steps to protect organizations. All that prior experience is useful to help explain how that might work and what organizations might need to do.
So Senator Rockefeller recently published a staff memo on based on the responses to the questionnaire to the Fortune 500. What did the staff memo say, and what is the significance of it?
Well, I think anytime a sitting senator, especially a chairman of a committee like the Commerce Committee, writes to 500 CEOs of America's largest companies, that's pretty noteworthy. And I think, first, the act of writing and asking these questions indicates the seriousness of the issue and the attention it's gotten on Capitol Hill. The responses, and apparently they numbered over 300, the responses that the senator received were summarized in a report issued by the staff of the Senate Commerce Committee. And I would characterize the memo this way. First, the memo described how all of the companies answered the first set of questions, which had to do with what are your security practices. All of the companies reported that they had put in place some kind of information security program. That's no surprise. And all of the responses substantially said and acknowledged the importance of cybersecurity. The staff memo described how all of the companies acknowledged that this is a really serious issue and a challenge. So that was first part. Second part of the staff memo, probably the more relevant part for purposes of what Capitol Hill is doing and kind of the prognosis for legislation, that second half of the staff memo talked about how many of the company's responses acknowledged that there's a role for the federal government to play. And I think that's what gained headlines when the staff memo and this interaction between Senator Rockefeller and the CEOs and the companies was reported upon by the major media. And the headline was, CEOs agree there needs to be federal role, maybe legislation. Underneath of that headline, if you unpack it for a second and read the staff memo, what it really was saying, I presume very accurately, was that almost all of the responses acknowledge that there is a role for the federal government. That is, I think, widespread consensus. There is a role for the government to help with law enforcement in the event of a cyber crime or cyber hack. There's a role for government to play. I think there's a widespread consensus in incentivizing the kind of interaction between business and government that helps to identify patterns, threats, and helps to coordinate actions to respond. This kind of information sharing is the subject of numerous pieces of legislation, one of which happened to have passed the House last year pretty handily. What, if you read the staff memo carefully, what they're also saying, though, is that there's not consensus on those specifics of what the government's role should be beyond that kind of information sharing facilitation. And the key issue, seems to me, where there will be debate in the coming year or two is specifically what should government's role be vis-a-vis telling or instructing or incenting the private sector to improve its security posture. That's really the place where there is no consensus, and I think there's a fair amount of input from the business community that responded to the letter where there was concern about one-size-fits-all or overly mandatory or overly prescriptive legislation that tries to impose security standards on business a la you know, maybe Sarbanes-Oxley type of requirements. That is, I think, a key issue for the business community.
So given that the senator has announced that he's going to retire at, I guess, his term ends next year, this doesn't look like it's a partisan issue. What is driving Senator Rockefeller?
No, I really don't think it's overly partisan. I think, you know, everything is a little bit partisan these days, but there is a large number of leaders in both the House and the Senate who have indicated their concern about the issue. They've received a number of briefings, classified or not, on the nature of the risks, and they're motivated to take some action, lest they be caught. I think we're all kind of concerned that there'd be an incident, a major incident, and then there was, you know, a feeling of not having acted enough. So beyond Senator Rockefeller, who is, as you say, retiring, there are other leaders, everyone from Senator Reid to members of the House, Mike Rogers, leadership, and others who have indicated their ongoing interest. And actually, even the Senate, there's a group of Senate Democrats who reintroduced, right at the beginning of January, a placeholder bill that was a sense of the Senate bill basically saying, we are intending to introduce another comprehensive cybersecurity bill, a la the Cybersecurity Act of 2012, you know, a new version of it, basically. So there will be continued interest. This is not a single senator campaign. It is multiple leadership. And as well, the White House has last year and the year before supported comprehensive legislation. They are proceeding with an executive order. It is widely known, or widely reported at least, that around the time of the State of the Union, there is expected to be an executive order issued that will speak to not only what government needs to do, but also be pointing to the Department of Homeland Security to be a convener of interactions between DHS, government agencies in different sectors, and the industry representatives themselves to work on voluntary standards or best practices that would be recommended then to industries. And the devil's in the detail in that situation as to how voluntary, how detailed those interactions get to be.
So what do you think the prospects for legislation in this area are, at least in the near term?
Well, you know, I don't know about the near term, but I think there was already legislation introduced in the U.S. Senate by leading Senate Democrats, putting a placeholder in for cybersecurity legislation, the same kind of legislation that was debated last year in the Senate, pretty comprehensive bill. I think that says that there will be an active push on the Hill to move forward with either multiple parts of legislation or more targeted, as was enacted in the House last year. The House passed a pretty targeted information sharing bill there. And I think watch the State of the Union and the administration's announcement of what they would like to do. It is widely rumored, indeed, you know, there's a fair amount of knowledge around a planned executive order coming from the White House on this topic. It's expected to be issued around the time of the State of the Union in February. So that, too, will happen, and obviously that's trying to push forward actions that are within current statutory authorization to take, and included in the executive order, for example, are likely to be requirements for Department of Homeland Security to do more to convene with industry groups that are considered to be important for cybersecurity purposes. These groups, or these industry sectors, are called the commercial critical infrastructure sectors, and they number probably about 12 or so, and they include telecommunications, energy utilities, I should say, health hospitals perhaps, transportation, any industry that, if their services were disrupted by a cybersecurity failure, then society would feel the effect of it. And the executive order is supposed to, rumored at least, to be calling on the Department of Homeland Security to up its game with respect to facilitating more progress with those industries via consultation, development of standards or voluntary standards that they could follow, that sort of activity. So it'll be a pretty active landscape whether or not legislation proceeds, but I suspect it will be both legislation as well as executive branch activity. And I should say that the U.S. is not the only venue in which government is activating. I expect, actually, very shortly, Europe, the European Commission, to release a draft directive, or a proposal for a directive, a European Union-wide piece of law that will actually speak to cybersecurity as well, and will speak to the obligations of the member states of your European Union to take steps to demonstrate their strategies around cybersecurity, and it will also speak to the role of business and taking steps to enhance its own posture.
So it's been now a couple proxy seasons ago, the SEC put out some guidance in a CF disclosure topic about cybersecurity disclosures. Have you heard anything new from the SEC going forward about perhaps an actual rulemaking? You know, they're real busy with the Jobs Act and the Dodd-Frank Act, but I guess...
There's certainly a lot on the agenda at the SEC. What you're referring to is the staff guidance that was issued in October of 2011. And what I've heard informally from companies is there's been a fair amount of commenting by the SEC staff on filings of companies. And we took a look here at Hogan Lovells. We took a look at the filings, the 10-Ks of a number of companies, and it's pretty clear that in 2012, at the early part of 2012, there was a very significant jump in the number of companies that included cybersecurity-specific language in their 10-Ks and their risk factors and other parts of their filings. As a matter of fact, it went from, I think, 1 year it was 22 or so of the Dow 30 had that kind of language, and the following year it was 30 out of 30. So that was a 40% jump right there in 1 year, and I think it's all based on having that guidance out. It's why not put it in? Because every organization of any size is now reliant upon some sort of digital infrastructure, and that's really what's really driving the risk here is if one is relying on that kind of infrastructure, there is a risk, and you might as well acknowledge it and then manage it, deal with it. So what I see from an SEC perspective is continuing oversight of the disclosures made by companies. If a company's been involved in an incident and it's been required to go publicly disclose it because of these data breach notification statutes I mentioned, then the SEC will have more of a reason to be looking and asking, well, was it appropriately disclosed in your filing? It's kind of a 360 approach, right? So you have an incident. You got to go figure out if you have to disclose it. It's not as simple as it once was to figure that out. You've got a couple of different competing considerations, not just data breach statutes, but other few other legal issues. Once you disclose it, though, you've got to consider what the implications are from an investor perspective and a regulatory perspective, and it's all connected.
So putting on your in-house hat, what do you recommend that companies do right now?
Well, I think from an in-house lawyer perspective, here's the thing. I think leaving it to the IT department is not a winning strategy. I think lawyers of various types, but if you're an in-house lawyer, I think there needs to be at least one person in the legal function that is looking at this from a counselor's perspective. There's a lot here. It's not just technology. There's a lot here in this arena that requires the counselor's approach and guidance. I started off with talking about incidents. Well, okay, you've been hacked, or somebody tells you they think we've been hacked, or something's gone wrong. What are the legal issues implicated by that fact pattern? And that's certainly a role that counselors play, and I know I've played in my practice here time and time again. Who do we tell? What does it mean for our public company filings? How do we actually take measures internally in an organization to mitigate the risk? And are there legal issues with respect to maybe increasing monitoring so that we can tell when something goes wrong? Well, there are some legal issues, including privacy issues. Do we allow bring your own device? How do we deal with social media risks? Because one of the quickest and easiest way a company gets compromised is when their employees click on virus, you know, click on innocent-looking emails that actually are not innocent. So how do you equip your workforce to be more careful, and how do you up your game? Lawyers can be of help here, and my own crystal ball says that you'll see the role of lawyers increase over time because of not only more regulation and more legal requirements, but also because lawyers can help proactively guide their clients to do the right thing even before those laws appear.
Well, thanks, Harriet, for your time. This has been a wealth of very useful information, and glad.
Oh, you're very welcome. I should say, if you want to keep up with some of what I'm writing, I publish on a blog. It's called hldataprotection.com, and we have regular updates on breaking developments here, things like the Senator Rockefeller's note, legislation, and cases. So that might be a good source for your listeners.
Thanks. Thanks very much.